Welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Szabó-Voss. Our goal is to discover, celebrate, and share Hungarian heritage and encourage you to do it too. We'll touch on food, travel, history, music, and language, and share stories from our listeners. We're glad you're here. This is a podcast where we'll encourage you to dig deeper to learn about your Hungarian heritage in a variety of ways. We'll have thought-provoking conversations and share resources. So whether you know a little or a lot about being Hungarian, this is the place to be. Hi, it's Liz, and welcome to Hungarian Living. Before we get started on today's topic, I want to mention that we have an e-newsletter through our sister website, Magyar Living. Each week, we cover a variety of topics that include Hungarian events, news, and organizations, Hungarian language tours and travel, Hungarian recipes, foods, and traditions, and Hungarian history, inventions, and creative inspiration. As you may have noticed, everything revolves around Hungarian heritage, and the newsletter is in English. So I will include a link in today's show notes, and you can sign up for the specific weeks that interest you. So let's get started with today's episode. I am here today with my friend and tour partner, Andrea Tordai from Gyurilő, Hungary. Szia, Andrea. It's great to have you back on the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Szia, Liz. I'm glad to visit you again.
Well, I love talking about Hungarian food traditions. As I was growing up, we had quite a few in our family. My two favorites were when my mom made palacsinta. She never could seem to make them fast enough. Also, when we had Hungarian soup on Sunday. We called it Hungarian soup, but it was the soup with the beef and the beef bones. It was a clear broth. The potatoes, carrots, celery, and onions were not cut. And we would build our soup bowl. First, we would add in the tserna testa or thread noodles, then add the vegetables, then add a little beef, and then add the broth. And those thin noodles still are my favorite noodles to have in a soup. And of course, we would fight over who got the bone marrow. We would spread it on toast and sprinkle a little salt on it. And wow, so simple, yet so delicious. So of course, now I'm hungry, now that we've been talking about that. But let's talk about Hungary as a nation and its amazing culinary traditions. Andrea, can you help us take a look back at some of the influences on Hungarian cuisine?
Of course. But before, let me tell you that it was very interesting for me to hear that we got the same type of soup from our mothers in our childhood. We are of the same age, I guess. Mm-hmm. But we live maybe 8,000, 9,000 kilometers from each other on two different continents. So it's interesting.
Yes. So,
in my family, we always had hen or beef soup broth on Sundays. And the rántott hús, the breaded meat, was also a must with some side dish and salad, pickles or kovászos uborka, fermented cucumbers. So, and the dessert was often a sponge cake cube plunged in melted chocolate and rolled after in shredded coconut. So it was a typical it was a typical Sunday meal in many Hungarian families in the 1970s, 1980s. So, and you should look, I have sent you a link, at a movie with the title Sinbad, based on the novel with the same title written by the Hungarian writer Gyula Krúdy. It's an amazing part when the Sinbad is having the beef broth and the bone marrow on his toast after. So you would remember on your childhood.
Okay, well, I will also include that as a link in the show notes so that everybody can think about it, because, you know, a lot of people have done that beef marrow on toast, but some people haven't, so they may not know enough about it. So it'll be nice to have the video and we can, they can check it out.
Yes, but I think we shouldn't eat it, very frequently, because this marrow, bone marrow, is not for slimming diet.
No, for sure. For sure not.
So back to your question, to the times of the Hungarian land taking in the 9th century, when the Hungarian tribes arrived from the east. So they were nomadic people. So the importance of livestock and the nomadic lifestyle of the Magyar tribes coming from the Ural region is apparent in the prominence of meat in Hungarian food. So they have cooked the meat dishes, the goulash soup, it means cattleman's meal, maybe, pörkölt, the stew, and the spicy fisherman's soup called halászlé. So traditionally, these dishes were made on open fire in a bogrács, or in a, it means cauldron in English. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, how one lives, obviously, makes an impact on how they, or what they eat, but so does their ruler. So who was one of the most influential kings of Hungary who made an impact on Hungarian cuisine?
Oh, yes. In the 15th century, it was King Mátyás Corvinus and his Italian wife, Beatrice von Aragon, influenced by Renaissance style, Renaissance culture. So they introduced new ingredients to the Hungarian kitchen, such as sweet chestnut, for example, spices such as garlic, ginger, mace, saffron, nutmeg, onion, and also the use of fruits in stuffings or in cooking with meat. It was Beatrice of Naples, his wife, whose Italian cooks brought the marzipan recipes with themselves to Hungary as well.
So oh.
You remember the nice marzipan museums and the marzipan of the Samos marzipan in Szentendre and the marzipan products in Hungary.
And that's almond, right?
Yeah.
An almond flavor.
Yes. So King Mátyás was the first non-Italian king promoting the spread of Renaissance style. It was under his reign that Hungary became the first land outside Italy to embrace the Renaissance art, the kitchen, way of life. So they have organized brilliant events with rich parties, with rich meals. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. So there's a strong Italian influence also, like many other cultures, you know, Hungary ends up being a part of a mixing of cultures, either Hungarian influencing other cultures or other cultures influencing Hungary. So, mm-hmm. And at one point, of course, Hungary was also invaded by the Turks. And how did that impact the eating habits of the Hungarians? Weren't they the ones that brought in the paprika as well?
Oh, yes. So although paprika is the symbol of Hungarian cuisine, Hungary's cuisine, the plant was brought to the country most probably by the Turks, only in the 16th, 17th century. So at first it was this plant, it was regarded and used as an ordinary plant and decorated the garden of the palaces of the noblemen. So at first, shepherds and herdsmen who had more contact with the invaders, they started to spice their meals with the fiery powder of paprika. Then paprika got to the kitchen of the peasants, and aristocrats found the peasants' food flavored with the red spice very tasty, and slowly they started to use it too. So by the 19th century, paprika became a dominant spice in Hungarian kitchens and in the restaurants. So due to the favorable climate and the geographical conditions, Hungarian paprika has a bright red color and a distinctive rich flavor that allowed Hungary to become one of the leading producers in the world. So, and you know which regions are grown the paprika? Kalocsa and Szeged in the southern part of Hungary. These are the heart of the production. These towns and neighboring villages are adorned with bright red threaded paprika strings hung from the fences and the porches. So these regions have the highest amount of sunny hours a year, and the plants need lots of sunshine to get ripe and sweet. So ripe peppers are harvested in September. You remember when we visited Kalocsa, and we attended, we took part in the paprika harvest and made the strings of paprika.
Yes.
So it was
lots of fun.
Oh, it was fun. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's important. It's a very important spice because the fresh red paprika is rich in vitamin C and other important minerals. So Albert Szentgyörgyi, the Hungarian scientist, was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1937 for discovering vitamin C, its anti-scorbutic and other physiological effects. So we are very proud of him.
So it's good for you and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it grows well in Hungary. So there you have it. So we can thank the Turks for the paprika, but what else can be said about the Turkish occupation?
Yes, so as I said some minutes ago, the Hungarians had always used lots of meat to prepare their dishes. So, but during the Turkish occupation, the Turks, being Muslims and don't eat pork, they have taken all other animals, the cows, the poultries. So the pigs were left for the Hungarians. That was the time when Hungarians started to cook pork dishes and use lard. So.
Okay. So.
Another influence.
So they didn't eat it as much before? Mm-hmm. Or, okay. So it just really increased. It was something to eat. I mean,
yes, pork has become very not popular, but it was the only meat that they could use. Yes.
Okay.
These times.
So invasions made an impact, but so did alliances with bordering countries. So what other food influences have happened with bordering countries?
Yes. So Hungarian cuisine was influenced also by the Austrian cuisine. For example, during the Austro-Hungarian monarchy, it started in 1867. So dishes and methods of food preparation have often been borrowed from the Austrian cuisine. And also the Austrian learned a lot from us. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have learned how to make strudel and, for example, the Kaiserschmarren, the Schmarni. It's also an Austrian a cake of Austrian origin. Or not only sweets, but, for example, baking veal slices coated in breadcrumbs. We learned also from the Austrians. Surely you have tasted already the famous Wiener Schnitzel.
So yes.
The same. So, but we caught not only the veal, but also chicken breast, chicken pork. So not only veal, but the method of coating the meat, it comes from Austria.
Okay. So what about, you know, we're talking about this meats and I know there's some heritage breeds. So can we talk a little bit about the Mangalitsa and the gray cattle?
Of course. So the Mangalitsa pig was developed in the mid-19th century by crossbreeding Hungarian breeds from Nagyszalonta and the Bakony Hills Mountains with the European wild boar and the Serbian breed. So the Mangalitsa pig grows a thick, curly coat of hair. Foreigners often call her a sheep pig.
Okay. That's that hairy.
Yeah, hairy, yes, because it's
very hairy.
Yeah. So the primary product made from this pig is a sausage. So it's prepared very similar to other meats. The minced meat is seasoned with salt, pepper, sweet paprika, and other spices according to your taste. So this was a Mangalitsa pig, but we have the gray cattle. The gray cattle is an ancient breed of domestic beef cattle indigenous to Hungary. So the breed probably arrived with the 9th century Hungarian immigration from the east to the Hungarian lowlands. So in the Middle Ages and early modern times, the breed was used as a draught animal, but from 1861 has been bred for early maturity and its beef quality. So they were herded live on foot to the markets of Europe. It was a very it was a very good business in the 17th century, around 100,000 animals were sold to the Western European towns yearly. So, and only 70,000 of them only to the German town of Nuremberg. So it's meat.
So they walked.
They walked, yes, with the hoidus, with the herdsmen from the region around Debrecen. So
yes. That's a big journey.
Oh yes, you can imagine.
Yeah.
So its meat is very healthy. When the, for example, when the Hungarian grey cattle arrived to Nuremberg, it was not allowed to cut other animals in the butcheries, not to mix the meat of them. Mm-hmm. So it was really mm-hmm. a very precious, a very good product. So the grey cattle are slender and tall. The bulls have a weight of 800-900 kilogram. The cows 500-600 kilogram, and the color ranges from silvery white to ash gray. The calves are born wheat colored and become gray at about 3 months old.
Okay, gray, so they
yes
they change colors.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like the Lipizzaner on our horses.
Yeah,
change colors too.
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, and they are robust. Easy calving and long-lived. Their horns are directed upward and are long and curved. So these are the grey cattles, a very good product. And now you can find lots of grey cattles already in Hungary, many of them for touristical purposes, to show them to the tourists, but also they use to prepare nice ham of them and to use their meat for preparing the goulash soup. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Well, it's good that the heritage breeds, have they been out of, did they diminish at some point where they had to intentionally bring them back?
Yes, yes. Their number diminished, you know, in one time, but today we have quite a lot of grey cattle again in Hungary.
And same with the Mangalitsa too, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Transylvania, which is the Hungarian area of Romania. And they have some different cuisine because, of course, the geography is different. And that land belonged to Hungary prior to 1920. And with the decision of the Treaty of Trianon, is now a part of Romania. But many Hungarians still live in the area. And I know that there are some certain specialties that you can find there that you don't really find in Hungary. And can you talk a little bit about those?
Oh, yes. So the Transylvanian kitchen was always very rich and very colorful. It's this territory is the mostly a mountainous area with deep forests that are rich in games, forest mushrooms, berries, forest berries, herbs, honey, forest honey. So you can imagine that the amazing meals that can be prepared of all these natural and fresh ingredients. So, and the horn cake derives also from Transylvania. Horn cake you can find already everywhere in Hungary. It has become very popular, a very popular cake also in the today Hungary and also in the neighboring country. I have met horn cake makers also on the main square of Prague, for example.
So the kürtös kalács.
The kürtös kalács, yes. Horn cake, kürtös kalács. You call it horn cake, yeah?
No, we call it kürtös kalács. Well, mostly kürtös kalács. I haven't heard it called horn cake before. I only hear kürtös kalács, twisted cake.
Maybe. The official translation, I have seen that it's horn cake. So,
wow. But,
it's a kürtös kalács.
But we have several food trucks in the United States and even businesses that sell kürtös kalács. It's been pretty popular. We have a place in Florida, in Atlanta, Georgia, in New York, Pennsylvania. So it's around. So I love that this unusual cuisine or desserts, you know, are kind of making their way to the United States because it's delicious and it's fun to get it there, but it's really nice to be able to get it in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Yes, or maybe you remember some years ago we visited Kolozsvár and we had a lunch in the Rédei Café, in a local restaurant, Hungarian restaurant on the main square. And we could try the so-called the famous Varga Béles. Varga Béles is an excellent dessert. Sometimes it's a main course. So after a big soup, a goulash soup or a bean soup with meat, it can be the main course. It's made of tiny, you know, thin stretch noodles, cottage cheese, and some vanilla flavor, and raisins. So, and this Varga Béles was made first in Kolozsvár, and it has become so popular, and it was so delicious that every day they had to take it to Budapest, to the restaurant, to some restaurants, to some famous restaurants of Budapest. So it was really a very good dessert.
So it was made in Kolozsvár, but transported to Budapest.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
To the Gundel.
It's quite a long journey.
Yeah. Yes.
For a sweet.
Oh, yes.
They should have just sent somebody
maybe,
to...
Maybe it's a legend, but I heard that...
I was thinking maybe they should send somebody over there to be trained how to make it and then bring them back to Budapest instead of sending the dessert back and forth, you know, or to Budapest. So,
oh, yes. But,
well, as always, Andrea, thank you so much for visiting with us and sharing your knowledge. We will have to talk about Hungarian food soon. And next time we talk, let's talk about the current state of affairs with food in Hungary, since we got a nice education on the history. And now let's, you know, the next time we'll visit about the current scene of Hungarian food.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me to join the podcast again.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. So thanks for joining us. Remember to check out the show notes for links to the things that we talked about in this podcast, but also to sign up for the Magyar Living e-newsletter, and we'll catch you next time. Hungarian Living is a division of Magyar Marketing, the Hungarian store, where you can find meaningful gifts with Hungarian style. Check us out at magyarmarketing.com. And special thanks to Stephen Cicek and the Animal Cannibals for the show music. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Hungarian Living, please subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite Hungarian. Check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in this episode. If you have a question or comment, email us at podcast@hungarianliving.com. We'll catch you next time.